Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go off the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
No, it's good.
She got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm Mikey Fornelli, joined, of course, with my producer, David Moses, and our new guest host, Mr. Braden Fogerson. Fogerson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Pretty good, but we're going to put you on the hot seat for the first little minute here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where's your fandom lie in professional sports? What are you going to bring to the table here for the Red Zone this semester?
Okay, so people that have listened to Red Zone episodes I've been on in the past know that I'm a huge NASCAR fan. Anyone that has any questions on that can email me, whatever, you know. But anyway, I love NASCAR, but I love baseball. I've always loved baseball. Big, big Cardinals fan. I'm a miserable Raiders fan when it comes to football as well. In terms of NBA, I don't really honestly have much fandom. I was a Blazers fan for a while because Myers Leonard got drafted to the Trail Blazers, and I loved Illinois basketball growing up, so I liked Myers Leonard. And that's a very hot take that I'm not going to stand by now either. So I like NBA as a whole. I think college is better than NBA in terms of playoffs, so I don't like to follow the NBA quite as much as the other two.
So speaking of basketball, I want to start off our Redbird recap segment to start the show talking a little bit about our very own ISU basketball teams, starting with the women's team, top conference team, 4-1 since the start of the new year, 4-game win streak, and top of the valley at 5-1. Just Kristen Gillespie and this team have really found a way to come out from a year where they made the March Madness tournament last year and really show up big to start this year.
Yeah, I'm just so impressed with Kristen Gillespie and the job that she's done with this team. I remember calling a game last semester, and after a loss the Redbirds took, she told the crowd, "We're going to figure this thing out." And it really seems like they're finally starting to do that. The Redbirds have really been on fire lately, and specifically focusing on last game where they went against the Belmont Bruins. Their defense was just so good. The Redbirds played with passion. They were tenacious and physical in the paint. They finished with 8 blocks. And it's just all really starting to come together for them. And, you know, the wins are stacking up.
Yeah, this team as a whole can really, really ball out. I think that, you know, being able to have a team that works as well as this, especially in the Missouri Valley Conference where you've got all these rivalries and all these important matchups, to be able to go into any of these games and feel like you have a really, really good shot to win when you have people like Paige Robinson that just own the floor when they're on it, you know, this Illinois State team looks really, really good this year.
And you said it there. I think one of the keys to this season has been that they have had leaders step up and play and fill some pretty big shoes from maybe last year or the seasons in the past. Mary Crompton, her last game, had a season high, 7 threes. Deanna Wilson, with her fifth, I think it was double-double of the season, that she had 10 rebounds and I think 14 points last game. The leaders on this team have made themselves known, and they've produced at a high level.
Well, that's the key, right? These leaders are on this team, but they've been around the block a couple times. This is the third, fourth year for a lot of these players. Deanna Wilson, Kate Bowman, Maya Wong, Mary Crompton. Paige Robinson comes in and kind of fills Juju Redmond's shoes that she left last season, and all of a sudden you have a team that has worked under Kristen Gillespie for 3 or 4 years together. They made the March Madness tournament one time, and they're looking to go right back.
And I watched this team last year, and I liked what they had, but they just weren't quite playing to their potential like they could have been. But I was, you know, when I watch them, I think, you know, you look at all these players and you're like, oh, this is what this player can play at if they're at their best 100% of the time. And if you get the most out of them that you can, I think just about this entire squad from top to bottom is getting just about as much as you can get out of their talent right now, and it's really, really working, and it's nice to be able to see that come to fruition.
And when you think about it, in the day and age we live in today where the transfer portal in all college sports is just so prevalent to college athletes, I think that is very special what Kristen Gillespie has done here. Homegrown talent, like you said, for the past 2 to 3 years, she's had the same players or a lot of the same key players, and they've really been able to come in and get a tendency as to what the direction this basketball, you know, program is going in.
Where does that leave our men's team? 2-3 since the start of the new year, 3-6 in conference so far, including a 2-point loss to the Northern Iowa Panthers last night on the road.
Talk about a tale of two teams.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about Ryan Peden's Illinois State men's team is they really have shown some flashes of brilliance this season under Coach Peden's first year. I think specifically of that Horton Fieldhouse game right before break, the win against SIUE, and a couple games that they've won since the new year that they stayed in and they won. Even last night, they really stayed in. But just not producing when it matters long term, and the record shows it.
You said it right there. They have shown flashes. They've shown momentary points in the season where they've been like, okay, we can build on this. But looking at the schedule leading up until today, they haven't been really blown out. You know, we haven't seen one of those games where it's just been like, oh my goodness, you were ripped apart. Yeah, they've let some games get away from them. And is it discouraging from a fan standpoint? Of course. But as a coach, this is the time where you're telling your guys, we're almost there. Let's turn this thing around and, you know, make something of this year.
And that's how go ahead, Mikey.
Well, I was just going to say really fast, I think we should actually talk a little bit about what we talked about with the women's team, how they have been together for so long, and finally that product is perfect. The only returning player or notable returning player on Ryan Peden's team is Kendall Lewis. And the other star players, including Seneca Knight, who led the team in scoring last night, and Colton Sandage, among others, are new to Ryan Peden. So in this world of the transfer portal, it'll be interesting if they stay together over the next 2 years, then we'll get to see what the product will look like.
You know, and that's tough because you got athletes that may not have the patience for that. And, you know, it's tough to build on something, especially when you're not really showing any type of positive production. Mm-hmm. And just really haven't been able to string together any consistent wins. You would win one game and then lose the next three. That's not a brand of basketball that you should, you know, want to play by.
And when I was talking about the girls team last year struggling to win these close games and feeling like, man, if they play to their full potential, they can start winning some of these closer games instead of losing them. It feels kind of the same way as what this men's basketball team is now, is that, you know, there are a lot of these close games. Like you said, there haven't been very many blowouts, if any. And, you know, all these games have been winnable if you strategize in a different way, perhaps. And once, you know, Coach Peden gets a better idea of how this team works throughout an entire season, he will come in and maybe next season and be better with it.
So, you know, what does that strategy look like? It seems as if this Redbird team really just hasn't been able to find their true identity, whether it's, oh, we're an offensive power team, defensive power. What is this identity for this men's basketball team?
Exactly. I don't know. They really don't have one right now. I guess the identity is the hope that they could be something. And is that something that players buy into, especially players that have seen other programs? I mean, it's not like they originally committed to ISU. You have Colton Sandage, who came from Western Illinois, and a couple other players who came into Peden's program, hopefully assuming it'll take more than 1 year to really get to that promised land.
Yeah, it'll take a little bit of time for sure. And when you're working with a new program and trying to make things fit for you, it's almost impossible to make it work right away. But, you know, eventually, you know, once it becomes apparent that there is a way to make this team work, that's, you know, if Coach Peden can't figure it out, then that's going to be a problem. But right now, no one really has an idea of where to go yet.
You can, like Mikey said, you can also look at that as a positive, though. They have something to work up to. And another thing, you know, from a player standpoint, and you realize you're losing all these games, it's not like you can blame it on anything else but yourself. They have to, you know, look in the mirror and say to ourselves, this is our team. We may not have that 3-season or 2-season veteran that's been here to establish a sense of leadership on the team, but we have to let it fall on us. It's got to be on us at the end of the day.
Let's talk a little bit now. We're just kind of touching all the bases for Redbird Sports. And speaking of which, let's talk about the baseball team. During break, our Christmas break, I should say, they came out with the baseball schedule. And let me give you a couple quick hits on that. They open at Austin Peay on February 17th. The spring will feature 27 Missouri Valley Conference matchups, including 9 more Big Ten matchups, with Illinois and Iowa highlighting that. They'll see powerhouse Arkansas again, who they defeated last February, and in all, 55 games on paper, which is just a couple games shorter than the maximum amount of games that a college team can schedule. So Coach Holmes' team is really looking forward to playing a lot of games against some tough opponents and really building that credibility if they can keep winning in conference.
And, you know, he talked about his excitement. He said, we're excited about this year, the schedule and the challenges that come. And he said he's also excited to see how this group, this specific group of players that he has, works well and gels together. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, we already talked about the Ryan Cermak, who was drafted. What round was he drafted?
It was like the second round, added area where they give lower level teams chances to take additional picks. So he was drafted the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, we've seen him go. We've seen Jake McCall, Aiden Huggins, Kyle Soberano, excuse me. But those shoes need to be filled, and I think that, you know, Coach Holmes is very excited to see who is going to be able to fill those shoes.
And I think that for a sport like baseball, it makes it a little bit easier to trust that that can happen, because when you're playing a 3-game series, even against a top team, you know, the odds that you can take at least one of the 3 games, you know, they're a whole lot better than, you know, when you go up against a powerhouse in football and you got 1 week to be able to prepare and you only get 1 game to be able to make it happen. You know, being able to make adjustments throughout a year, being able to, you know, get more comfortable with your teammates and, you know, having a lot of people that return, see if they can develop, you know, it gives you a lot of, you know, hope for this Redbird lineup.
Looking over this start of the season, though, and I've heard this from people within the program, it's a tough schedule. Don't get me wrong. Mm. But they're opening not at Arkansas again. They're opening against a way easier team and a couple other things. And I'm not to try and downgrade opponents. ISU baseball has really not played to their potential the last 2 years. But looking at their non-con schedule in 21 and 22 compared to 23, they could get out to a hotter start. And that could be the difference in maintaining that winning mentality throughout the season. Because what seemed to happen is the Redbirds have just kind of lost it by midway through the season and just end up losing games they shouldn't in conference.
You know, and when talking about what it is that we need to make sure that we're doing to string together a consistent flow of wins throughout this, like you said, tough season, you know, you got to look at, you know, the returning veteran pitching staff, this veteran pitching bullpen that we're going to be entering into. I think it's going to be very advantageous for the ISU Redbirds to have that on a weekly basis and be able to execute in the bullpen.
And I also like the confidence from Illinois State to be willing to add some more of these tough opponents, to be willing to go back and play Arkansas again, to be, you know, having more Big Ten opponents you're dealing with. You know, like I said, it's, you know, none of those games are unwinnable and you can split series and things like that, but they certainly are tough opponents. So it shows a lot to, you know, the Redbird team as a whole that they're willing to be able to take, you know, chances on those games. And, you know, like we've been saying, you know, this team, you know, especially the infield, I really, really like this infield, and this infield defense still. And, you know, you got some good pitching as well. So they certainly have themselves, you know, the work cut out for them, but they got a good shot here.
And one last thing before we end the Redbird recap and move on to the MLB. Let's talk about Zeke Vandenberg really, really fast. David, I know you're a big fan of Zeke, hopefully a future Bear. But Zeke obviously has been named the 2022 Buck Buchanan Award as the best defensive player in FCS football, becoming the first Redbird to do so. And just a really solid year for Zeke. And I believe he might be trying to go into the NFL draft. I don't know if he will be drafted there, but it'll be worth a shot as he was the MVC Defensive Player of the Year, best defensive player in the FCS, obviously on the first team then, and an MVFC Scholar Athlete of the Year.
And, you know, looking back at it, calling, you know, I think 2 or 3 games last year, he was always just a very vital part to that defense. If he wasn't on, that defense usually wasn't on. But when he was on, you know, quarterbacks really didn't have a chance. And he showed that night in and night out, you know, last season.
And this Redbird football team has been kind of known for their defense over their offense for quite some time now. And, you know, missing Vandenberg is going to be, you know, certainly rough for Redbird fans. But, you know, to be able to have someone that was that good come through this organization, I think it means a great deal to future recruits and people that might consider you know, becoming a Redbird, that man, that, you know, that guy, you know, was a linebacker for Illinois State, and he became so good, and the coaching staff was able to develop him and turn him into a player that certainly has a good shot at being drafted. And, you know, that's a really big deal for this program.
That's the bottom line there. Hopefully it helps the recruiting more than anything. That's the four biggest hits about the break time we had. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about the MLB, including some interviews our own Braden Fulgerson did with some real-time MLB players. We're coming right back on the Red Zone.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Thanks, Paul. Welcome back to the Red Zone. Paul DeYoung, he is a former Redbird and a now St. Louis Cardinal. He was not talked to in our next segment, but we do have some interviews coming up here. A quick little wrap from Braden Fulgerson, who attended the Cardinals caravan stop in Bloomington on Saturday. Talked to Bernard Gilkey, manager of the High A Palm Beach team, and over 100 home runs as a Cardinal. Mason Wynn and Ivan Herrera, two of their top prospects. And of course, Jake Woodford, right-handed pitcher, who had some choice words about my Chicago Cubs, but I'll let you guys hear that. But Braden, what about that experience and getting to talk to those Cardinals was cool for you?
It was kind of like a dream come true. I've watched the Cardinals, you know, since I was growing up, since I started watching baseball. The Cardinals have been my way of being able to understand the game and to be able to have all these players, especially these young players that the fans don't really know all that well yet. For them to be the ones that get to go out to these places and meet fans and get to sign autographs and let fans ask questions about, you know, what's your post game meal and just a bunch of random things that, you know, only little kids and, you know, fans that have watched Cardinals forever can think of. You know, it's a great way to get to know these players that are up and coming so that when they do get to the major league level or when they do get more playing time, you know, the fans are familiar with them.
We're going to take a listen to Braden's wrap right now. This is some of the St. Louis Cardinals last weekend.
The MLB offseason continues to charge on, and the St. Louis Cardinals are using that time to get up close and personal with their fans. The annual Cardinals caravan made a stop in Bloomington's DoubleTree Hotel last Saturday, and players and alumni alike answered questions from favorite pregame meal to how to stay competitive at the highest level. Former player and current Palm Beach Cardinals coach Bernard Gilkey says loyalty is a huge part of farm development.
Our staff, we go out there, we work hard. We put in our time, we put in our efforts to develop these players, and we stick with them. We trust, you know, our process and the draft and things like that, and we just stick with them and encourage them, and they play the game the right way.
One of the biggest rising stars within the farm system is shortstop Mason Wynn. Wynn is the number two prospect within the organization, and the offseason is a great opportunity for him to improve his craft.
Really, the biggest thing for me right now is I'm trying to put on some weight. Throughout the year, I tend to lose around 10 to 15 pounds, and it can be a struggle towards the end. I mean, it's a lot of stress on the body, so I'm going to try to go in there real heavy this year so I can kind of mellow out, and you know, hopefully hitting-wise, I can make a little bit more contact.
One of the biggest signings of the offseason was when the Cardinals signed Wilson Contreras to a deal that would make him Yadi's replacement in the lineup. Of course, this was much to the chagrin of Cubs fans that sent him to the All-Star game three times in Cubby Blue. Cardinals right-handed pitcher Jake Woodford says that playing Chicago adds a little extra meaning to games.
So here's what's cool about rivalries, right? You always got to have someone on the schedule that you are going to elevate your game to. And, you know, the Cubs, it's obviously the fans don't like each other. I'm sure there are players that get along, but it's fun to have someone to look forward to that you really want to give it to a little bit more.
Even before adding Contreras, the future already looked bright for the Cardinals behind the dish. Panamanian power bat Ivan Herrera is the number seven prospect in the Cardinals organization, and his love of the game came from none other than Yadi himself.
Since I was a kid, I would remember watching 2011, the World Series, watching Yadi catch, and you know that I knew that I want to be a Cardinal that day, and you know then I chose the Cardinals because I knew Yadier Molina come from the lowest levels and become one of the best catchers in the big leagues. I knew he had some people that helped him do it that way, and I chose the Cardinals just because I thought I could be better or like him in one day.
Events like these give fans the opportunity to get to know these players as they rise through the ranks in baseball. Reporting for 103.3 WZND, I'm Braden Fulgerson.
Thank you for that, Braden. That was some of the St. Louis Cardinals, and I'll give a quick apology. Jake Woodford, he did not actually roast the Cubs. He gave a very respectful answer, which it really makes me mad because I really wanted a reason to get mad. But my favorite quote, this is a tangent, my favorite Cubs and Cardinals quote ever is when Chris Bryant at the Cubs convention, so like a very similar thing to that for the Cubs, said something along the lines of, who wants to play in St. Louis? St. Louis is boring, or something like that. And people lost their minds. They were, you know, the Cubs fans thought it was the greatest thing ever. The Cardinals fans wanted to hit him with every pitch every time he came up to at bat. But I wanted Woodford to say something like that, so I'd have a reason to be mad. But nope, he was very respectful and talked about the rivalry. Makes me mad, Braden.
Well, how do you know that he didn't say anything bad? I might have just edited that out.
Well, yeah. I don't know why you would, because you would have wanted to see the look on my
face. Great content.
Yeah, yeah. But the St. Louis Cardinals, starting with them a little bit for the MLB in general, they have had an interesting offseason. They haven't done all too much to add to their team, but they were a team that pretty comfortably won the division last year with the two best players in the NL. And Goldschmidt and Arenado. And Braden, looking at this roster moving into 23, do you think they've done the right couple things for this team?
I think so, because the bottom line is no one else in the division is all that great either. I think the Cubs are the only other team in the division that looks like really kind of pretty well improved, and like they did a really good job this offseason so far. And, you know, being able to replace the guys that you lost, sure, you're not adding new, you know, players at new position that give you any extra, you know, boost. But, you know, for the meantime, at least until you get to the trade deadline, you look pretty, pretty smooth in terms of dealing with the rest of the NL Central, because like it's been probably ever since, you know, the last time the NL Central was really a powerhouse, like 2016, 2015, you know, the Central's been a pretty easy division to get through, because it's pretty much always just one, maybe two teams that seem competitive.
And you said maybe to the Cubs, and it's obvious they've done their due diligence this offseason, but was it enough? Was it enough to change the culture of this team and make it to where they get more wins? I know, Mikey, you're the Cubs fan, but so what do you think?
Let's remind the people, shall we? All right, I'm going to list them off. Here are the notable signings for the Cubs over break. They went kind of crazy. Dansby Swanson, Jameson Taillon, Drew Smyly, Eric Hosmer, Trey Mancini, Cody Bellinger, Tucker Barnhart, and Brad Boxberger. So it's an interesting crew. None of them are players that alone would take your team to the next level, because this isn't 2019 about Cody Bellinger. But altogether, that is a – my dad put it like this way the other day. It's a tough nine outs. Every single time, no matter where in the order they come up, all of those players are tough outs.
Do you think that this was a good, like, I don't think this was the greatest time maybe for a player like Swanson. I know he just got a huge contract. He's going to be, let's say that the next 2 years for the Cubs doesn't go as planned.
Yeah.
You just wasted 2 years in his prime. If I'm him and I'm signed on for a long-term contract with the Cubs, you know, and our direction is we're not really winning games, you're wasting, you know, vital years of your career.
I understand. I completely understand. I was confused too. I mean, aside from the fact that his wife, his now wife, they recently got married, plays for the Chicago Red Stars, the women's soccer team. Dansby Swanson, in his press conference when he first got introduced, somebody asked him a very similar question, a Cubs reporter, and said, you know, this team isn't as much of a win now state as your former Atlanta Braves. What was the reason behind coming here? And he said something like, he asked them in his interview, what is your plan to get me to the next level, to get this team to the next level? And he didn't share it, but they obviously have something in-house that they think with this new team, hey, we're going to try and be able to compete. Is it enough to pass the St. Louis Cardinals, as we talked about? On paper, no, but things could get a little bit crazy. The Cardinals might have a little bit more of a down year, yeah. And if the Cubs start really playing well with this team, anything can happen.
I don't think it's necessarily enough to get past the Cardinals, but it is definitely enough to get past the Reds, the Brewers, the Pirates. Oh, yeah. And from there, you look at what team you've got, and you work on it from there. I think this team is far and away a much more difficult team. Like, when I'm watching Cardinals versus Cubs this year, I'm a much more afraid of, you know, dealing with this roster than what we saw last year, especially toward the very end of the year as well. And I think, for one, it's impressive for the Cubs to be able to make that move. For two, I think it's going to sell more seats when you got someone like Bellinger back in the lineup, someone mm-hmm. that can be a leader as well. I think the roster that they have now, especially with those new people they added, I think it's a lineup that can be, you know, if they get into a lot of slumps and if they kind of, you know, sync up their slumps at the same time, this team will be really bad. But if they also start syncing up their hot streaks, they're going to be a really formidable opponent.
Cody Bellinger is on a one-year contract. He's in a prove-it year. I get it. But he seems to think there's something that's going to be changed for so he can get back to that MVP level. He loves the Cubs hitting coach. He's worked with them in the past. That's part of the reason he came here. And now I have faith that he can try and turn it around. Do I think he's going to get back to MVP levels? Not right away. It's been 2 years where he's been pretty bad. But I think in a prove-it year in a new team, in a very hitter-friendly ballpark, I think he could be pretty solid, almost to the point where it might get difficult because the Cubs might not be able to re-sign him then, or they would be able to, but they won't want to. But that's a different story. But we'll see how this year phases out for them, and maybe if they are competing, they'll need to keep players like Cody Bellinger.
I tell you, both of your teams are more encouraging than my White Sox. I'm just gonna leave it. I'm gonna leave it at that. We don't have to elaborate. It's just very tough offseason for my team.
Well, they didn't make nearly as many signings as we thought they would, and I hate to keep elaborating because I know you said you don't want to talk about it. But with a new coach, they might seem to think, "Hey, here's the roster that should have gone all the way to the World Series at one point over the last 2 years, or at least could have gone, you know, won a playoff series." But they were really bogged down by a bad coach. If they have faith in this coach, maybe they say, let's give it one more run with this roster. I guess they don't have Jose Abreu anymore, which is a tough loss, but you still have the Tim Andersons, the Eloy Jimenez, if he stays healthy, and a lot of players that really build this team up.
Yeah, I sure hope so. You hit it on the head right there. I think one of the things that I've been worried about is injuries. Injuries have been side by side with the White Sox for about 2 years now. And, you know, Tim Anderson struggled with his injuries. I'm curious to see if he's going to come back and show any signs of any lingering effects from, you know, how he ended his season last year. I really hope that this team is able to really get one more chance under new head coaching management. But, you know, after this year, if they don't really do anything, it's going to be interesting to see how this roster shapes out.
It's also going to be difficult for them to, like, if they do feel like this team isn't it and they need to restart, like, just like how the NL Central is pretty weak, you know, the AL Central is also almost equally weak. And, you know, it's going to be a lot harder to, you know, get a good draft pick when, you know, you're facing the Royals 19 times a year and you're facing, you know, some pretty bad teams a lot.
Well, they did the right thing on a couple key pieces that help this team if they still think they're in win now mode. Andrew Benintendi comes in, and then that means maybe you don't play Eloy Jimenez in the field nearly as much. I don't know if he'll be wanting that, but if you, as much as you can DH Eloy Jimenez, that's for his own benefit because he's going to hurt himself in the outfield again. And then you bring in Mike Clevinger before that, which adds to a really solid pitching staff that they're bringing back every main member of after arbitration. You see Dylan Cease, Lucas Giolito, Michael Kopech, etc. So that's that young pitching staff that's finally coming together. I think this is the White Sox year where they can figure it out finally. their year to see what they're made of with this team. And I'm not a White Sox fan at all, so I'm really overly positive for no reason. But I think if they're going to be good with this core, this is the time. Because all of a sudden, after this year, with a new coach, what other excuses can be made?
I was going to say, I wonder how many Southsiders have uttered that phrase. This is our year.
And I really don't want it to be. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Cubs fan. I mean, it doesn't really affect me until, I guess, the World Series. But if that happened, I just think they're buying into the team they have, and that's respectable.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, so I don't really have anything against the White Sox. I'd like to see them do well because they certainly, you know, as a fan base, you know, need something to be able to be excited about. But I'm not entirely sure if this is their year. They do have a really good core around them, but it's been mismanaged the past couple seasons, so you're going to have to find a different way to handle it.
All right, we're going to end the segment on that. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the team all the way over in France. They got the win today. We're going to talk about the Bulls. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
So the Bulls are weird, right? The Chicago Bulls. And I say that because they win today in Paris in an NBA global game by almost 20 points, 126-108. And they've started 5-4 since the new year, though. They've beaten the Warriors, the Nets, the 76ers. They're beating good teams. It's the opposite problem of last season. And you beat a team like the Pistons, who's not very good, but you lose games that you shouldn't. I think specifically the first game of the new year against the Cavaliers, when Donovan Mitchell had 70 points. And it was the same night as an unfortunate NFL event, which we'll get into in the next segment. But so no one really talked too much about it, and with good reason, but Donovan Mitchell goes off on the Bulls in overtime, and that was such a tough loss. I mean, the Cavs are a really good team, don't get me wrong, but they blew it in that one, and that's the problem. They blow it in some of these games.
So there's a few things, you know, we're halfway through the NBA season that the Bulls have shown Bulls fans so far. One is they miss Lonzo Ball tremendously. The facilitating Lonzo Ball, the shooting Lonzo Ball, the defensive Lonzo Ball, the Bulls miss him. You're at a point now where he hasn't played in over a year. You cannot rely on that anymore until he's able to come back. He can't even, I heard he can't even run 5-on-5s right now, let alone 3v3s. It's very tough when you're evaluating that situation specifically. Number two, they've shown you that the free agent signing in Andre Drummond was elite. They left last year not being able to rebound the ball, and getting him just helped them tremendously do that dirty work, get in the paint, get those grinded out points. And I think that, you know, if you're the Bulls, it's somebody that you should really look to keep around. And three, you might have a problem at the head coaching position because we've heard rumors that the locker room wasn't happy with what Billy Donovan was doing, you know, schematically. And I think it's just starting to take a toll in the locker room.
Now, to me, this team just isn't ready yet. They've got a lot of young players. They don't really have a whole lot of leadership around that makes you feel like this team should really be competitive anyway. But the reason why I complain about the NBA playoff and how it's run is even when it was eight teams, that's too many teams. You're getting, teams with losing records in the playoffs, and they're not going to beat the Celtics. They're not going to beat the Nuggets or anything like that, but they're in it anyway. And now you've got 10 teams that are going to be in the playoffs with four of them in a play-in thing. And it's like, the Bulls are right on the cusp. They're, back and forth between in and out. And, if they just continue being mediocre and even slightly below that, they can still make these playoffs. And, they're not going to do anything much beyond that anyway. But, that's what they're fighting for instead of trying to continue to get better, trying to, know that this isn't quite, they're not quite ready yet. And, you can't try to be something you're not too early, or you're just going to waste what you have. And so why I hate the play-in, adding even more teams is that teams like these Bulls and the Pacers, those types of teams are fine with being mediocre because it gives them playoff games that they shouldn't really be in.
And, but the thing is, You want to look at who are their main sources of just production. You look at DeMar DeRozan, you look at Zach LaVine, and it falls on them to be those leaders vocally and, leading by example on the court. This season, when you compare DeMar DeRozan's season from last year to this one, obviously there's going to be a little bit of a dip, especially as he's aging. Zach LaVine, he started off, kind of struggling, and that's when we start to hear the rumors about him and Billy Donovan kind of going head to head. And now he's starting to really come to his own. When those two can get on the same page and realize that isolation ball is not really the most effective way to score, especially in today's league. I mean, look at Golden State. They have so many role players that love to pass the ball, and it leads to them opening up opportunities for threes. People ask so many times, how do the Warriors get off so many threes? They don't do it by Steph Curry dribbling the ball 30 times in one possession. They do it by passing the ball, and I think that that's something the Bulls really need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. They just, like I said, they're not quite there yet. They need to be able to add more if they're going to be able to play like that.
DeMar DeRozan, currently 13th in the NBA in points per game at 26 points per game. He's been a solid force for this Bulls team. I think a lot of people thought he would kind of fall off this year as a veteran after having the year he did last year, but he's had probably a better year than Zach LaVine, although it's a tough day to say that because Zach LaVine put up 30 today in Paris, and I think Zach LaVine's finally kind of figuring it back out. But this Bulls team, as Fulkerson said, is really good, but they're not there yet. They're not Eastern Conference best good. They're not the Celtics good, who are currently 33-12 at the top of the East.
We're in a league where the Eastern Conference really is competing to be the front runner to, when you're talking about who rules the NBA, Eastern or Western, Eastern Conference is really stepping up as the premier conference in the NBA. You got Boston, Brooklyn doing their thing, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo with Milwaukee. Even, if you want a sleeper, you got Miami who comes up every year and seems like they make an impact in the playoffs. The Bulls cannot beat those teams in a seven-game series that I just named.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we're going to just have to roll with the punches until we get full strength with Lonzo Ball, because let's not forget, when they had Lonzo Ball, the Bulls were scratching the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about last season,
last
right?
Last season, yeah. Right.
That's the thing. And kind of like Braden said, I like your point. You don't blow it up because you're in a playoff spot, but you're not going to do anything in those playoffs. you look at the top of the Eastern Conference, four different teams flirting with 30 wins, the Celtics, Bucks, 76ers, and Nets, only 40-something games in the season. That's insane. That's really incredible, and I think this Bulls team needs to decide what their identity is. As we talked about identity in the first segment, do they need to do something now with all the guards they have, as we talked about before the show started? Do they need to make some deals and try and get themselves at least to that a little bit better level?
So a question is, who goes first if you, and this is worst case scenario, who goes first if you have to let one of these three core pieces of the team, you know, have to let them walk? Is it Billy Donovan, the head coach, DeMar DeRozan, or Zach LaVine?
Ooh.
Well, the contract of Zach LaVine scares me a bit. The new contract,
$37 million.
I don't think they would do that though. I don't think they'd trade him, one, because he's on that new contract, and two, because they committed to him. Billy Donovan, I don't know what the validity is of that in-house stuff. I think DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine both confirmed it really wasn't as much as it really needed to be. They're just getting the best of each other. I guess even though he's been the best player on the team, I guess it's DeMar DeRozan because he still has that value, despite his age. And it hurts because I don't think that's what they need to do. I think if anything, they got to figure out something with the insane amount of guards they have.
I think that having DeMar is a big deal for these young players that are figuring things out and getting themselves better. To be able to have a leader like DeMar, one of the only not only veterans, but like a guy that's just been there for so long and been doing it so well for so long. You know, to be able to have a guy like that to lead a team, if it's working correctly, you don't want to really get rid of him. But then again, you know, you really can't afford to get rid of Zach LaVine either. And so I would say, you know, between those three, Billy Donovan's got to be the problem.
Who are the true tradable pieces, though? If you decide to stick with Donovan, to stick with LaVine and DeRozan, we keep talking about all these point guards they have, but you don't want to trade any of them. You don't want to trade Ayo Dosunmu.
Yeah.
Kobe White is, I guess, a little bit more tradable, but it still hurts. And then Lonzo Ball has no value. It's just difficult.
Unless you can try and do the whole like, oh, Ayo, you love the Bulls so much that we can trade you away and do the whole like flip you and then you'll get you back like an Aroldis Chapman type thing.
Yeah.
There's so many.
But that's long term. It's saying that, you know, in this window, oh, come back next year and we'll try it again. No, they don't have that time. They don't have that affordability.
You hit it right there. I think on roster they have like six guards, but all of them have produced in their own way. Like you said, Ayo Dosunmu, I think he got his starting position this year a few games ago. Kobe White, that was one of the guys where I was almost 100% sure he was not going to be with the Bulls past offseason. But he's here, and he's producing at a pretty good level, offensively and defensively. Dalen Terry, the rookie first-rounder who really has not been utilized at all. Pretty much just gets garbage time when we're either losing or winning. For me, that's confusing because you drafted this guy. He's a guard. We already had a number of them. I didn't even mention Alex Caruso. You flip him between the one and the two. It's just when you have a young guy like Dalen Terry, you want him to produce and you want him to develop into an all-star type player. He's not going to do that by riding the bench.
Yeah, how can you develop a player like that?
You don't. And like you said, they flip Alex Caruso between the one and the two. You almost have to have him play the two because you need him out there defensively, and you have better point guards out there. But Alex Caruso almost plays with that Lonzo Ball style that you need, the facilitation style that the Bulls desperately miss. And that's why it's a problem. Every single one of these guards the Bulls have does something different to help this team. Without any of them, they would not be as good. So if they're going to trade one of them, they got to get something back. They got to get something really good back. Even if it's just half a year, if it's a rental to try and give them a chance against any of these Eastern Conference teams in the playoffs.
Now, transitioning into the broader scale of the NBA, and we're at the halfway point, you know, All-Star Weekend is approaching. What teams have really surprised you all at this point in the season?
Give me the Grizzlies.
Grizzlies.
Over 30 wins there in the West. I know they were good. Obviously, they gave the Warriors a run for their money last year in the conference finals, but 31-13, the Grizzlies, led by obviously Ja Morant, but a lot of other really solid players, 11-game win streak right now in that Western Conference, and that's just such a crazy group. Right under them is the Kings, and there's another team that's really surprising. Their own 5-game win streak, I'm looking at the stats right now, not nearly as many wins. The Nuggets and Grizzlies have really kind of set themselves apart, but truly, looking at that Western Conference, which is wide open right now, and shockingly, the Lakers are not in one of those top seeds, but the Sacramento Kings, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, they all are.
You know, for me, I'm probably going to say Utah. I mean, they're at 500, 24 and 24, but they're seventh in the Western Conference. They've really played above their expectations, to say the least. This is one of the teams that was expected to be fighting for that number one overall pick in next year's draft, in this year's draft. And they're sniffing the playoffs.
Yeah.
Larry Markkanen has done a tremendous job. He's really played with vengeance. I could see it in the game against the Bulls, I think a week ago. He was dunking everything. And you could tell that he wanted to send a message. You all messed up by letting me go. Mike Conley has been a seasoned veteran for years, and I think that he adds a certain level of elite scoring to that offense. He's done a tremendous job. And then when you look at the defensive side of the ball, Jordan Clarkson has done pretty well stopping and being able to cause havoc on that defensive side as well. Utah is really surprised.
I'm going to take the Nets because I don't know if the Nets were, you know, I mean, they have a lot of superstars that they're paying a lot of money to, and you would hope that you could expect them to do well. But over the course of, you know, the first, you know, the beginning of the season and all the distractions that went on for the Nets and all the questions of, like, what is going on and is this team being managed well at all? The fact that they're sitting not only with a winning record, but, like, you know, they're 27-16. They're, like, actually good. You know, it really surprises me because I think in abstract you would expect them to be, you know, a lot more disappointing than they actually have been.
I think that's because for once since Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving's tenure with the Nets, they are not focused on anything off court. I think ever since they got there, they struggled with some type of controversy, whether it was guarding a player, whether it was guarding a coach, a staff member, or other coaches from other teams potentially coming to the Nets to coach instead of Steve. It was so much drama going on with this team for the past 2 to 3 years that it really affected the way that they played on the court. Right now, they have a new coach who's just took the interim off of his head coach status. They have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant playing lights out. I think Kevin Durant actually has an injury right now, but he's been having an MVP-type season. They're finally starting to gel, and then the catalyst to all of this, Ben Simmons, whether you think it or not, he is a very integral part to both offense and defense of this team.
I was literally about to bring the same thing up. Is he playing like the team, like the player that the Sixers literally lost an entire season to get? No. But yeah. He's, you know, he's got those average stats. He's not averaging double digits in anything, but he's 7 assists, rebounds, and points in every single game. That's impressive, and that's what you need on a team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You need that very solid role player. It kind of sucks to have to say that that's what Ben Simmons has become based on the expectations, but if that's what he's going to be, he's doing a really good job at it.
You can't have three superstars on one team like that long.
Well, that was the problem with Simmons.
And so Ben Simmons being that solid role player, like you're saying, is very much good enough to me, I would say.
It didn't work out in Philly for that reason.
He's realized what he needs to do. He's realized his role on the team. He's not going to perform like that number one overall pick that he was. He's not going to have as many people expecting him to put up 20 and 10 a night. He is going to put his head down and grind and get those hustle points, hustle rebounds.
He doesn't
rebounds.
Need to is the great thing.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, probably the greatest, one of the greatest all-around players of our generation, is one pass away the whole game. He doesn't need to do that. And then you have Kyrie Irving, who off the court, not a great guy it seems at this point, but on court, fantastic player, cannot be denied, was an essential part of LeBron James's Cleveland Cavalier championship team and is still doing those great things with Durant. In a different program here in Brooklyn. But let's talk a little bit about the former champs, the Golden State Warriors. Obviously, they are not doing as well as maybe people thought they would. The sixth seed right now in the Western Conference, and they have kind of an interesting thing. 17-5 at home, 5-17 on the road, including a loss against the Bulls on Sunday. What is it about that team, David? You're the basketball guy here. What do you think? What's going on with the Warriors, and why is it that they can only find ways to win at home? They're staying afloat, though.
That's the key word. It seems like the Warriors every year have this one period or a few rough patches during the season, aside from that 73-9 season a few years back. But it seems like they always go through something like this. Steph Curry ends up getting dinged up for a few weeks, comes back, and just starts breaking records again. I'm not worried about the state that they're in. I think that they're going to clean this up before the end of the year. I know playoffs are approaching in a couple months. I think they're going to clean this up and be able to produce at a high level like always.
We've gone long in this segment. We want to talk about basketball, I guess. That was what we were itching to talk about since since the end of the break, I guess. When we come back, we got to talk a little bit about the NFL divisional round. We'll do a pretty modified version of the pick six. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Illinois State Winkers Wright, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, Redbird County. Let's fly.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. We're going to do a little bit of some picks for the NFL divisional round coming up, but before we start on that, we would be remiss to not at least reference, I know it's been talked about a lot in recent weeks, and it's been a couple weeks, but we didn't have a show after the DeMar Hamlin injury, and I think we just got to quickly touch on that. David, I know you especially want to talk about this, being a former player yourself. Just honestly, the scariest moment I've seen in live sports, and a scary couple days.
Yeah, I can remember watching that live and not really understanding the severity of what was going on until you hear how many breaks they're taking, nobody really having answers. I think that was one of the scariest parts, is nobody had an answer for what was going on until, let's say, hours after the situation had occurred. And like you said, seeing that live as fans, players, I think a lot of people need to, obviously, the people who are a little bit more closer to the situations, like teammates or the opponent and the coaching staff, they need, if they want, they should always be have the option to speak to someone, because that was definitely a traumatic experience.
That's what made it scary for me, was that's what truly made it scary. And it sounds weird because obviously there was a guy down in the field, so I could see that it was scary. But seeing how many times Joe Buck and ESPN went to commercial within that 15 minutes, because they always tell us, here in broadcasting class and as aspiring journalists, they always say, if there's something like that going on the field, an injury, don't speculate. You don't want anyone to think, you know, there's going to be a death on the field or anything like that. Don't speculate. Just go to commercial, distract, something like that. And, you know, they go to commercial 3-4 times. By the fourth time, I'm like, holy cow, there's a paramedic on the field. And you see Josh Allen crying. I'm like, this is more than just a normal injury.
And I was glad you were able to bring that up, because what I wanted to be able to say that I feel like not very many people have given much consideration to is when there's like silence and like no one knows what to say, and people choose to fill that with the speculation. And you saw on Twitter people saying like NFL said they have 5 minutes to warm up. And I don't know if anyone really verified that, but if that were the case, and the fact that they waited so long to get the players off the field and to tell the fans to go home because the game wasn't going to be played tonight, then I don't think DeMar is able to make it out of the stadium and through traffic and to the hospital that he needed to go to that quickly. So I don't know if that's – we don't know what exactly happened, but the fact is that the way that it happened and the way that the fans were told to stay and weren't told to leave yet until DeMar had left, and the way that that worked out, I think that went about as well as it could have.
Just an incredible job by the training staff there from both the Bengals and Bills and all the doctors and nurses, et cetera, at the UCincy Medical Center, getting him treated right away and miraculously is perfectly okay, it seems like, or at least mostly okay at this time, already back home. Just crazy. And we'll let that segue right into the first game I want to talk about in the NFL divisional round. We're going to do a little bit of a different style of pick six. We're just going to call it pick four because there's only four games available, and we'll be making picks, David, myself, and Braden. And starting off with the Saturday games, first it's the Jaguars at the Chiefs. This one is the Chiefs favored -8.5. Thought I'd give out the odds because we're not going to have Steve or Dane, obviously, or a guest. So the odds there are Chiefs -8.5. What do you think, David?
Duval.
You're going to go with the Jaguars?
No, just kidding.
Oh, you felt you had to.
The Chiefs are going to obliterate this inexperienced Jags team, and I don't care how nice the guy's hair is, Trevor Lawrence is going down.
I would completely agree. I think the Chiefs are probably the team to beat in the AFC right now. I think the team that could beat them, though, is Cincinnati. We'll get to that. That's the team I think has a chance. David's wheeling back in his chair because he doesn't like that take. But I think the Chiefs will make quick work of the Jaguars en route to yet another AFC Championship appearance.
Yeah, Andy Reid coming off a bye. The Jags probably have some momentum coming off that crazy win that they had. But to be honest, they had one good half. They didn't put a full good game together. And coming up against this Chiefs team, I mean, just don't give it that much thought. It's not going to be close, I don't think.
To the NFC. Two teams out of what was called the NFC least 2 years ago. Now they have three playoff teams in the final eight teams. And the team that won that division 2 years ago isn't even there, Washington. But now you have the Giants and the Eagles. And this
I did
one
not even realize that.
Yeah, I thought about that the other day when I was looking, and I was like, holy cow, it's the Giants, the Eagles, crazy. And Dallas. And they were all worse than the Commanders or the Washington football team at the time 2 years ago when they were the worst division in football. But there's only one way from there up, and they really have proved that, as the Eagles are one of the best teams in the NFC by record, Dallas right there with them, and the Giants a nice win to move on to the next round. What do you think in this game between the Eagles and Giants, David?
You know, the Giants were impressive last week. Saquon had a great day on the ground with two touchdowns. Daniel Jones put up two more on the board through the air. The difference maker, though, for the Giants this week is their ability to make game-altering defensive stops all game. You're going against one of the hottest teams on the offensive side when healthy, and you cannot have a game where you don't commit a sack or a turnover for the entire game. That's what they did last week, and I'll just tell you now, if they do that this week, they're going to be having an early exit to the playoffs.
So who do you want to go with?
Yep. If the Giants can do that, I'm going with the Giants.
I'm going to agree. I think the Eagles are a very solid football team, but they had a terrible schedule. They had a really fun year. They have a terrible schedule. Jalen Hurts is still not 100%, and I think you can't deny the importance of running the football in the NFL playoffs, and I think that's going to be all Giants in this one.
I cannot believe that we're picking a clean sweep here. My reason's a little bit different. I made my playoff picks heading into the playoffs, and I picked the New York Football Giants to make the AFC-NFC championship game, and I'm going to stick with them for that. I think the Eagles do have a very, very good team, and I think that the Eagles, you know, have very many different ways through the air, on the ground, with their defense. They have a lot of different ways to win, to beat you if certain ways aren't working. But I think, you know, Hurts having been hurt and, you know, they don't have a lot of momentum. Sometimes coming off a bye can lead to sloppiness. You know, I'd like to pick the upset because the playoffs are not that predictable sometimes.
The odds in that one is Eagles -7.5. So they are favored in that one by more than a touchdown. Taking a look at Sunday's games, then, we got the Bengals and the Bills. Speaking of the DeMar Hamlin game, this was the game that we didn't really get to see in that situation, and again, with good reason, no complaints there. But now we theoretically have to see them go head-to-head, and this time it really matters as one's going home. Who do you think, David?
This is going to be a great game. Two teams that have really impressed all year. I genuinely can see both of them in, you know, the championship game this year. But as I've said since week one, this is Josh Allen's year. All year I've been an advocate for this Buffalo Bills team.
You really have.
But when this guy flips the switch and starts to heat up, he's one of the best in the league, if not the best. And I've just been very confident in him and his team.
You really have been a supporter of the Buffalo Bills all season long. And I think it'd be really cool if they go all the way to pull out some of those David clips and see him talking about the Bills all season long, which makes me so sad to pick Cincinnati in this one. Because
I'm so surprised.
I've seen Joey Burr turn on that young playoff magic. We've only seen it once the year before this, but he's got it back on. Right at the end of the year, he got so good that he was being considered for the MVP. He really is solid. This team is solid. They find ways to score even when they don't score touchdowns, meaning with kicks and everything above. I'm going to go with the Bengals in this one. And I think in the very beginning of that game we saw, before DeMar Hamlin's injury, the Bengals were playing with much more fire. It was 7-3 before we saw that. Obviously, there was a lot of game left. But if the Bengals offense can just tear through the Bills defense as they did to start that game, I think it'll be a good one, but it'll end up being Cincinnati. Maybe we'll get to see the new NFL overtime rules, though. I know the Bills have played in a lot of big overtime games recently, so.
Hide your folding tables. I've got the Bills. It is a toss-up. Both teams are great. Both teams are very deserving, and I love watching both of these teams play. But I just don't think the Bills let what happened last week happen again. They were looking past their opponent, and they had a quarterback that they didn't have a whole lot of film on, that he was able to take advantage of that because he knew that they were going to be preparing for the run. But I don't see it happening here against the Bengals. And like I said, it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be the best game of the weekend, I hope. But I would take the Bills in it.
I agree. It's going to be the best one of the weekend. Bills -5.5 right now. That's destined to be a close one, it seems. And finally, Sunday night, Dallas and the 49ers, the Cowboys coming off a win against the Buccaneers, knocking Tom Brady out of the playoffs to my disappointment. But we're going to talk about the Cowboys and the Niners here. And the Niners have been such an interesting team because we've talked about it all year. They have that stuff to be one of the NFC's best teams, and they're proving it now, even with a third-string quarterback who's really showed up. David, what do you think between the Cowboys and the Niners?
You know, this is such a tough one. The Cowboys and that defense versus the 49ers and that offense is actually overwhelming to think about all of the talent that we're going to see this week. Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott. The list goes on and on. Both of these teams are very talented, which I said it makes it overwhelming. So you factor that down. I'm just going with who's the better quarterback. I like the Cowboys. Dak Prescott had one of his best games of his career last week, and I'm just not really drinking the Brock Purdy Kool-Aid just yet, especially in a playoff setting.
I'm going to go with Dallas as well. I think, and don't get me wrong, Brady did not play well. He had some moments, but he did not play well. But if this Cowboys defense can find a way to stop the greatest player ever in the playoffs, if they don't stop a third-string rookie quarterback, something's going on. And that Dallas team would be memed on forever. The Cowboys better win this game. I don't care how good San Francisco's offensive other targets are. They will have their time. But for now, it's going to be, in my opinion, it seems like it's going to be an NFC Championship game between the Giants and the Cowboys. Who would have thought?
So to me, I'm before I make my pick, I'm glad you brought up that he's the greatest quarterback of all time and that it's impressive they beat him, because this Buccaneers team felt a lot like the last year that Brady had with New England, where they went up against Tennessee and lost a game. And, you know, right after that, Tennessee certainly looked good, and, you know, the running game was a lot better than it has been this year. But, you know, they were a really good team, but they didn't make it all that much further than that, if I remember correctly. So, you know, I don't want to give them too much credit for beating Tom Brady, that absolutely should retire this year, in my opinion. But I will say that Cowboys and 49ers are both really good teams. Also going to be a close one, I would think. But Cowboys are on short rest. And so because of the fact that the Niners have two extra days of rest, you know, in their favor, and the fact they're at home, I would want to take the Niners here.
So Braden goes with the Niners. The betting agrees with them. Niners minus 3.5. That's going to be it for this final, or this first edition of 2023, I should say. It's not the final edition yet. That's not till December, May for David. Who knows? We're going to have lots of fun, though, in the time being. Thank you for tuning in tonight to the Red Zone. Have a good night.